It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is currently 42 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 79% humidity, northeast winds to 3 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies today, and those sunny conditions are expected to continue until Monday or so anyway. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Island Trails Network has a new executive director, only its second one ever. We'll have an update from the Iditarod Trail. And Alaska's Attorney General told Walgreens Alaska doesn't want the abortion pill.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Justice Department investigation finds that the Louisville Metro Police Department in Kentucky has engaged in a pattern of civil rights violations and unconstitutional policing. That includes the excessive force as well as the unlawful discrimination against black people. Here's NPR's Ryan Lucas.
Speaking in Louisville, Attorney General Merrick Garland ticked off a long list of violations identified by the Justice Department's investigation. That includes conducting searches based on invalid warrants and conducting unlawful stops.
This conduct is unacceptable. It is heartbreaking. It erodes the community trust necessary for effective policing.
The announcement comes almost 2 years after the DOJ opened its investigation in the wake of Breonna Taylor's killing. Garland says the Louisville government and police department have entered into an agreement in principle for a consent decree with an independent monitor to oversee police reforms. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
In Tennessee, a court has temporarily blocked today's planned release of new footage from the night several Memphis police officers beat up an apparently unarmed black motorist following a traffic stop in late January. Defense attorneys for the five officers charged with Tyree Nichols' death requested the delay. The U.S. Director of National Intelligence says the intelligence community remains divided over whether the coronavirus began in a lab or in nature. Here's NPR's Jeff Brumfiel.
Speaking before the Senate Intelligence Committee, Avril Haines said that the agencies she helps oversee remain split. Four believe the virus started in nature, while two, the Department of Energy and FBI, favor a leak from a laboratory. On top of that, those two agencies have different reasons for their conclusions.
It is a really challenging issue, and I think our folks honestly are trying to do the best that they can to figure out what exactly happened based on the information they have available to them.
A separate hearing in the House of Representatives also probed the origins of COVID. One thing lawmakers on both sides of the aisle agree on, the Chinese government is not being open, and that's making it difficult to establish how the pandemic began. Jeff Brumfiel, NPR News, Washington.
Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says the central bank has not decided its next steps for combating stubbornly high inflation, but he cautioned today.
If, and I stress that no decision has been made on this, but if the totality of the data were to indicate that faster tightening is warranted, we'd be prepared to increase the pace of rate hikes.
Powell told members of a House committee today that what he shared with members of the Senate yesterday, more aggressive interest rate hikes possible. Meanwhile, U.S. job openings at the start of the year declined by 410,000 to 10.8 million, but they remain historically elevated. Figures for the month before were revised slightly higher to reflect 11.2 million job openings in the final month of 2022, the data coming out of the government today. The Dow is down 57 points. It's NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's Island Trails Network manages several trail systems and organizes marine debris cleanup around the archipelago. KMXT's Brian Venois reports the organization recently named a new executive director for the first time since the nonprofit's inception.
Travis Cooper previously served as the nonprofit's Trails Program Coordinator. His former position was more seasonal, but now as executive director, he'll be working part-time year-round. Cooper says he doesn't have any new major projects coming up, but is open to proposals to the nonprofit.
So at the moment, no big aspirations or plans. A little bit of it is ITN has its own reputation for itself, and we have, you know, an open door to projects that can come to us.
The network primarily focuses on general maintenance of trails, such as adding boardwalks to muddy sections or organizing trash pickup events. Occasionally, the network takes on larger projects. The organization has helped develop a trail system that wraps around Near Island, which is owned by the city. Recently, ITN received a $1 million federal grant to help with marine debris cleanup. Island Trails Network was founded in 2006 with Andy Schroeder at the helm. Cooper says Schroeder will continue to work with ITN, just in a different capacity.
He's not leaving the town or community at all. So Andy will still be involved with kind of helping more or less find the funding for a lot of those programs and to keep those community events going. And then also just kind of keeping the spirit of trails going.
Cooper also works at Kodiak High School as a special education teacher, but is currently on family leave to help care for his newborn daughter. He says it was a perfect time to make the transition.
I knew I was going to be taking some parental leave, so I get to spend a lot more time hanging out with my daughter. She gets to come to the office with me.
Some of his new responsibilities include reviewing insurance policies, memberships, and planning larger events.
It's a little eye-opening how fast the time goes and how much time is required for some of the admin part of running a small nonprofit. I think I have more respect for small nonprofits and how they're able to manage and pull things off the way they do with small budgets.
This summer, Cooper says the organization hopes to continue work on Near Island as well as begin a new project on the Saltery Cove Trail, along with the regular activities such as beach cleanups. Their next major event is the Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival, one of the network's main fundraisers and membership drives. Submissions are due at the end of the month. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The Alaska Marine Highway System has announced significant changes to this year's summer ferry schedule, running May 1st through September 30th. The mainliners Columbia and Kennecott will not be sailing at the same time, decreasing ferry service to Prince William Sound and southeast communities. That's because the state doesn't have enough crew to run them, according to a statement from the Alaska Department of Transportation. Sailings across the Gulf of Alaska from Whittier to southeast on the ferry Kennecott are postponed until more crew is hired. The Columbia will be the only ferry serving southeast Maine run between Juneau and Bellingham, Washington. The Taslina, which serves the northern panhandle, is also offline due to short staffing, and the mainliner Matanuska is out of service for repairs. The ferry Tustamina will sail the southwest route along the Alaska Peninsula Aleutian Chain to Dutch Harbor once a month from May to September. The Tustamina will have regular scheduled port calls to Homer, Seldovia, and Kodiak Island, including the city of Kodiak and the villages of Port Lyons, Yuzinki, and Old Harbor. According to the state's announcement, until they hire additional crew to sail the Kennecott ferry, cross-Gulf sailings to Whittier are at a standstill, as well as calls to Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and Yakutat. To see the full Alaska Marine Highway summer ferry schedule, visit dot.alaska.gov. Pharmacy giant Walgreens is going back on a decision to offer the abortion pill mifepristone in Alaska, following pushback from the state's attorney general, as well as 19 others nationwide. Abortion pills are still available through medical providers, but as KDLL's Riley Board reports, doctors say Walgreens' decision could create new barriers and increase stigma.
In January, the FDA approved the abortion pill mifepristone for retail in pharmacies like Walgreens, which announced shortly after that it would offer the pills in stores and by mail. There are 11 Walgreens locations in Alaska, including one in Soldotna. But now, the company is taking that back. In their letter, Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor and the other Republican attorneys general urged Walgreens not to sell the abortion pill by mail and threatened legal action. The pharmacy chain agreed yesterday to not offer the drug in Alaska or the other objecting states. Abortion is legal in Alaska, unlike several of the other states that signed on. Dr. Robin Holmes is a Homer-based family medicine physician who specializes in reproductive health care and is a fellow with Physicians for Reproductive Health. She says Alaska's landscape creates unique challenges for abortion access, and that the announcement from Walgreens could have repercussions even in communities where the company does not have stores.
Many, many remote places that may be off the road system, or even some communities on the road system, only have access to medications through the mail, and that can be provided by many of these large chains.
Holmes says despite the language of the letter, the pill is a safe and well-researched option. In 2021, it was the second most common method of abortion in Alaska. She says as it stands, Alaskans seeking the pill now have to get it through a healthcare provider at a clinic.
What this was proposing and what Walgreens has decided not to proceed with is that a prescriber could prescribe this pill and you could go to a pharmacy and pick it up just like you could any other medication, like for your diabetes or your asthma.
Holmes says going to a provider's office to get a pill can be hard in parts of Alaska with few doctors. She also worries the change sends a message about the role that politics can play in medical access in the state.
Stigma plays a big role in access to reproductive health care in this state. So what I'm worried about moving forward is that Walgreens changing their policies due to political pressure is going to further the dangerous stigma.
In their letter, the attorneys general write that they see it as their responsibility to, quote, uphold the law and protect the health, safety, and well-being of women and unborn children in our states. On Tuesday, a group of almost two dozen Alaska legislators shared a letter urging Walgreens to reconsider its decision. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Crews in Prince of Wales Island's largest community are working to restore service after a water outage that began Sunday. City officials in Craig issued a boil water notice on Sunday after the water pressure plummeted, leaving some residents with dirty water and others with no water at all.
By Tuesday morning, Craig Public Works crews had one of four so-called treatment trains running normally and were working to bring another back online after Sunday's outage. City Administrator Brian Templin says crews are working to clear clogged filters.
The second train that we replaced the media in, they ran the first backwash last night and are expecting to run the first second backwash this morning. And once the second backwash has been run, then they can start producing water and putting it into the system from that train.
He says that with two trains working, that'll allow the system's pressure to rise. After that, crews can start collecting water samples to test it for bacteria like E. coli. Templin says that could begin as soon as Wednesday. They'll send those to the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
Right now, we expect that the when the second treatment train gets fully online today, that we will get water in the system and get the system up to the pressure by late this afternoon or this evening. And that'll put us in a position to take our water samples tomorrow and send them off to the lab.
Those samples need to come back clean before the boil water notice can end. Craig City officials announced the notice Sunday evening, warning residents to boil their water for at least 2 minutes before using it for drinking, cooking, or teeth brushing. Templin says the notice was put in place because when water pressure levels drop too far, it allows contaminants in the system. The outage has shuttered tribal offices, schools, the public library, the youth center, and the pharmacy. The DEC requires boil water notices when water pressure drops below 20 pounds per square inch. In a Monday announcement, city officials said results were not expected before the weekend. That means residents will see water return to their pipes, but they are still expected to have to boil it through at least Sunday. But it could be a while before all four treatment trains are running normally. Two are only partially working, and Templin says they'll need to order new filters to return to full capacity.
We're working through a project to order and replace the filter media in those two other treatment trains.
Templin says it's unclear when those parts might arrive. City officials released an update Tuesday, asking residents to keep conserving water. They're asking residents not to flush their taps until notified by the city that it's safe to do so. They say if too much pressure is put on the system, the levels could drop again and trigger a new boil water notice. Templin says that the plant had been nursing a problem with clogged filters for a few weeks. He says crews had been gearing up to fix the problem when pressure fell. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
A race is shaping up in the 2023 Iditarod. This is coverage of the Iditarod on Alaska Public Media. I'm Casey Grove. Front of the pack teams have reached the race's Ophir checkpoint, roughly 350 miles into the 1,000-mile race. That's where Jesse Holmes arrived first a little after midnight, with reigning champ Brent Sass about a half hour behind in second. Iditarod teams are spread out over about 100 miles this morning, all the way back to Nikolai, as mushers start to take their mandatory 24-hour rest. That includes Knick's Ryan Reddington, Aniak musher Richie Deal, and Bethel's Pete Kaiser, all resting this morning in Takotna. Reddington had earlier led the race into McGrath and won the Alaska Air Transit Spirit of the Iditarod Award and a pair of beaded beaver skin mittens. The trend of unseasonably warm weather continues out on the Iditarod Trail. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports from Nikolai.
Veteran Nick Petit's team is the first into Nikolai early on Tuesday morning. The musher is happy to visit the checkpoint at the school, where volunteers serve him some hot food.
So what's for dinner?
We have bacon.
Ooh.
Bacon
and bacon. That's a good start.
A few hours later, in the heat of the midday sun, he's lounging on his sled, snacking on, well, more bacon. He's in no hurry right now as he takes an unexpected early 24-hour rest, which mushers are required to complete once along the trail. His strategy?
Stay away from that big thing in the sky there.
The sun and the trail behind them factored into many mushers' decisions to stop in Nikolai on Tuesday. Temperatures soared above freezing, about 15 degrees above average for the small Athabascan village on the banks of the Kuskokwim River. A few mushers took advantage of the heat themselves, napping in their sleds or on jackets on the snow. Mila Porsild is also hoping for a nap, but first has to switch out the strips of plastic that cover the runners of her sled. The plastic got scratched going over the exposed farewell burn area, where mushers often encounter ice and wind-blown ground.
There was no ice on top of the dirt, and weirdly enough, I think that provided more control.
Still, she says, the trail into the checkpoint was challenging, and she had to send 3 injured dogs home from here, but it wasn't as bad as she feared. Iditarod officials had warned mushers to brace for the worst moguls in race history. Matt Hall also was pleasantly surprised.
I was prepared for the worst it's ever been, which puts me here with smiles, because it's like, oh man, that was actually nice.
Hall is happy to wait out the sun and enjoy his successful last run. Nearby, Matt Failer is dishing out water for his resting dogs as he prepares to leave the checkpoint. His race schedule has his team running in the heat of the sun, something he's not too excited about.
I mean, it'd be nice to sit here in the heat of the, you know, and just let them rest, but kind of got to keep moving down the trail. So we were able to get them out of the heat yesterday, but they're going to have to run a few hours in the heat now.
But he says he's got to keep moving down the trail. Reporting in Nikolai, I'm Lex Trinan.
And the Iditarod this year looks like it did before the COVID-19 pandemic began. There's no longer a vaccine requirement and no mandatory testing. Checkpoints like White Mountain and Takotna are hosting teams again. It's also the first year since 2020 that Nikolai is fully open for Iditarod fans to fly in. Nikolai Edzino Tribe First Chief Vernon John says the community is ready to have guests back.
It's pretty good to have it back and seeing people move around this morning and all excited, you know.
Nikolai is an Athabascan village home to roughly 100 people, about a quarter of the way into the Iditarod. Resident and tribal administrator Kristen Wills says people in Nikolai wanted to return to normal traditions.
COVID is going to be around for a while, but we don't want it to hold us back anymore, you know. We don't want to lose our tradition, and we're just going to keep going on with things.
Wills says the community is also restarting its annual spring carnival celebration later this March for the first time in 3 years. We'll have more race coverage throughout the day at alaskapublic.org, including photos, more stories, and sled dog profiles. You can also sign up for our special Iditarod newsletter and find our Iditapod podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Casey Grove, and this is Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
The job market may be cooling a bit. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. The total number of job openings on the last day of January declined slightly month over month. The total is still very high, 10.8 million. The number of people quitting their jobs decreased by 200,000, and layoffs and discharges increased for the first time since October, up by 240,000. In December, job openings had unexpectedly spiked to a five-month high of 11 million. Meanwhile, in February, employment in the private sector increased by more than 240,000. That's according to payroll processing firm ADP. Its report showed a higher gain than economists expected. The government's more comprehensive jobs report comes out on Friday. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 8th day of March, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:44. It will set again at 6:57. That will give us 11 hours and 12 minutes of daylight, a gain of exactly 5 minutes compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 53 degrees, set in 1943, and a record low was zero, set in Chile, 1971. They have a lot of records. Currently 42 degrees, fair skies, it's a beautiful day. Out at the airport they have northeast winds at 3 miles per hour, 79% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with high near 45. Northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm later this afternoon. For tonight, partly cloudy, low around 31, light and variable winds turning to the west, maybe to 15 or so after midnight. And for tomorrow, sunny skies, high near 42, northwest winds to 20. And those sunny skies, or mostly sunny skies, are expected to go at least through till Monday. They are expecting some wind to kick up starting on Friday, northwest 35. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:28 this afternoon. That will be an 8.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:40 this evening of 0.2 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 3:01 p.m. and be 14.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:18 tonight of -0.4. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory for today and Thursday. Northwest 20 today, seas to 9 feet. West 15 tonight, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 20, except northwest 30 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 9 feet tomorrow. And just a quick note, they have changed the forecast for the east side. It used to go all the way out to 100 miles. Now it's forecast out to 15 miles to try to make it a little more accurate. Out in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 15 today, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, southwest 20, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, west winds to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. For Thursday night, they're saying north 25, seas to 4 feet. And for Friday through Sunday in the Shelikof, northwest 30, seas up to 6 feet. Reminder to parents, today and tomorrow is the early release date for grades kindergarten through 5. They will be dismissed at 1:50 p.m. today and tomorrow for scheduled family teacher conferences. Call your school office if you have any questions about this. Also, remember on Sunday we spring forward at 2 a.m. and you get to lose an hour's sleep unless you go ahead and just sleep in and get up an hour later. Daylight savings time returns on Sunday, and we'll be getting an extra hour of playtime in the evening. Don't forget to set your clocks. The Kodiak City Council will be having a work session on Thursday, immediately followed by their regular meeting. Both meetings are being held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. They're open to the public, and public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT on 100.1 FM as well. The meeting will be web-streamed, and web-streaming links and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Other meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. They're having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Tomorrow, the Assembly is having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And a week from today, next Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. The next meeting of the Kodiak Island Borough will be Thursday, March 16th. They will be having their next regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30. All these meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. If you have any questions, contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310. And don't forget, you can also see the Kodiak Island Borough meetings on YouTube. They have their own Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, you can get live stream notifications. Iditarod has started, the Kodiak Public Library's annual reading challenge to highlight the Iditarod sled dog race runs through the month of March. Mush North, read 1,000 minutes or more, keep track of your reading, write a book review, and win prizes. For all ages, sign up at kodiak.beanstack.org. And guess what? Kodiak's Escape Room is back, and it will run through April 14th. Daily time slots are available except for Thursdays. Open to all ages, but children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Groups of 3 are recommended. Call the library at 486-8686 to reserve your spot in Kodiak Library's Escape Room. On Saturday, the library will hold an afternoon craft, making flowers out of comic books and graphic novels. Supplies provided by the library. For ages 12 and older, please stop in or call the library at 486-8686 to reserve your spot. But again, that's Saturday at 2 p.m., afternoon craft, making flowers out of comic books and library supplies the comic books. Celebrate your fandom at the library March 17th and 18th. The library will host FanCon, a pop culture convention celebrating various fandoms through cosplay, panels, video games, and more. Stop in or call the library for specific times for panels and events. No registration is required, and it's open for all ages. The Alaska Sea Grant is hosting a Business of Fishing workshop in Kodiak. That's happening March 15th, which is a Wednesday, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Fisherman's Hall. The workshop will cover business planning, tax strategies, and risk management. It's free, but advance registration is required, and lunch will be provided. Just visit Alaska Sea Grant, all one word, .org/events to register, or contact Julie at 907-250-9512 for more information. And among the people attending Comfish, Coming up next week is the CFEC, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. They will have a booth, and they will be having an event after ComFish on Thursday, March 16th. Stop by their booth to discuss new limited fisheries, current status of local fisheries, technical permitting issues, or whatever you'd like to talk about. And their after ComFish event is on Thursday, March 16th at 5 p.m. in the Fisherman's Hall. Join the Choose Respect initiative to encourage the formation of healthy, respectful relationships and promote a culture of no tolerance for domestic and sexual violence, and participate in the Choose Respect March 2023. It's happening Wednesday, March 22nd at 12 p.m. And for more information, call 907-486-6171. Begins and ends at the Shunack Tribal Hall, Wednesday, March 22nd, 12 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.